Hello, welcome to this special edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, and I'm joined by guest Tony Miliano, former UC kicker. How's it going today, Tony?
I'm good. How are you, Scott? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, doing great. Thanks. Before we get into it, like, how are you spending your post-UC career?
Yeah, so basically I am just working, and I work at a firm called Johnson Investment Counsel, which is based in Cincinnati. I actually work over in Kenwood. We have our main offices over in Montford Heights on the west side. So I grew up on the west side, went to Ellard High School, and now I get to work at a firm on the west side. So that's pretty cool. And just working in, you know, the financial advisory industry. And yeah, I mean, basically been doing that since I graduated and got married a little bit less than a year ago back in September. So just enjoying life.
Sounds pretty great.
Yeah.
Let's get into your playing career. How did you end up being a kicker? Is that the number one thing people ask you? Is like, how did you become a kicker?
Yeah, it's probably top three questions I get whenever we're chatting about football. But I guess it's kind of an interesting story. When I was growing up, I had always played. Well, I played pretty much all, like, you know, baseball, basketball, soccer, and football. And but it was kind of when I got to high school that I realized I wasn't really going to play all of those sports. And I wasn't going to be a starter on all of them. So when I went out for football my freshman year, I went out for quarterback, and I thought, well, I realized pretty quickly that I wasn't talented enough to be first string, or probably even second, third, or maybe even fourth string. So I realized that wasn't for me. And my favorite sport has always been basketball. So I actually dropped. I didn't play football or soccer my freshman year of high school, and I just focused on basketball. But then the following summer, my dad and I were just kind of talking, and he said, well, why don't we try to go to a kicking camp and see what happens? And, because we had that connection. My older brother, Chris, had played soccer his whole life, and he was actually really good. So he had taught me a ton, I mean, about soccer, about how to strike a football or how to strike a soccer ball the right way. So, so basically, but it's like, let's just, you know, fuse the two together. Let's go to a kicking camp and see how it goes. And it ended up going pretty well. So the next year, sophomore year of high school, we went out for football as the place kicker. And that was pretty much all that I did from the start. And that's kind of how I got into it. And the rest, I guess, is history. So
that had a nice backstory, like with your like, how old is your brother? Like, how much did he teach you about just like how to like prepare to like kick like that?
Yeah, I mean, he's 5.5 years older than I am, and so he played in high school and went on to play at Cincinnati State and then to Xavier. So basically, I mean, at any time that I was playing sports, he was all throughout growing up, he was teaching me everything there was to know about soccer. But it's funny because he was really good at soccer, and I don't know, I was just okay. And my youngest brother Scott was always the super athlete growing up. I'm sorry, is it like super loud in here? Can you?
Yeah, no, you're fine.
Okay, because I got something going on in the background and I'm kind of distracted. Sorry. So why don't I try to answer that again? So your question was, how much did my brother teach me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, he pretty much taught me everything about soccer outside of whatever I learned in practices and things like that. And like I said before, he was really, really talented and played in college and everything. And so it was just kicking around with him out in the yard and him teaching me all the basics of soccer and, you know, how to kick the football. So from an early age, it was him setting the seed, I guess.
So how did you end up walking onto the UC team?
When I was at Elder, after that first camp that I went to with my dad, I ended up going to like probably 15 more throughout my high school, you know, summers, throughout sophomore, junior, and going into senior year. And UC, I sent my videos to them and to the coaches, and they asked me to come, you know, as a preferred walk-on. They weren't ready to offer me a scholarship. Back then, Jake Rogers was going to be a senior by the time that I would come in as a freshman. So Jake was obviously a fantastic kicker and had already established himself as a starter for 3 years before that. So they weren't ready to offer a scholarship. And frankly, I probably wasn't ready to be offered a scholarship at the time. So, I went on a visit and loved it. I loved everything about it. And, I had some offers from a couple of other smaller schools, but ultimately it was kind of my lifelong dream to go to UC and to be able to play football for them, even if it was just a walk-on opportunity. That was more than enough reason to get me to go there. So I wouldn't change it for the world, for sure.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, you came in when Jake Rogers was still around. How was the competition after he left? Like, obviously, you ended up winning the job, but how does that work? Because I know a lot of people like know how quarterback competitions work, but there's not really a lot of press about who the kicker is going to be and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think it was my freshman year. There was another guy who transferred from Wake Forest. I don't know if you remember Shane Popham.
Oh, yeah.
And he was really, really good too. And he started as a punter for Wake Forest for a while. And so he and I kind of battled it out that my second year and I think it was his fifth and final year of college. So, I mean, it was really good, competition. And, it just happened to work out that I got a chance, I guess. And, I remember it was pretty much up until the very last week before I think Coach Jones had decided who the starter would be. So that was always, that was really good, I think, from the start to learn that, you know, this thing's not going to be handed to you, and you have to earn it, and you have to compete for it. And obviously going forward, you know, that changed when Andrew Gantz came to UC, and he's still there, and he's done a fantastic job. And so, you know, I was on the opposite end of that probably no more than 3 years later. And the competition's always going, no matter who the starter was the year before and no matter who has a scholarship or who doesn't. It's who's the best man for the job, and I think that's the right way to do it, for sure. So the competition really, it's no different than anyone else that is on the team, whether it's quarterback or, you know, a defensive lineman or a kicker. So it comes down to who puts in the work and who earns it. So
if we can backtrack real quick. So you were on the 2010 team, which was Butch Jones's first year after the great 2009 season. What was it like being on the team? Like when things kind of crashed down, was it hard getting through that season, or could everybody see the light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, no, it was tough, I think. And obviously I don't know what it was like to be at the peak the year before and then have to go through a 4-8 season. But I do remember going into the season, everybody was pumped. Like, everybody was, I was so excited to just watch these guys that, you know, I was redshirting, so I wasn't playing, but there was a lot of excitement, and I think Coach Jones really got the team juiced. But then when things start to fall apart, I mean, I'm sure it happens almost anywhere. It you know, team kind of starts to split a little bit, and, you know, some people lose focus of what the original goal was, and they start to think that they shouldn't follow what the rest of the team is doing. So you kind of have this split between who wants to follow the coaching staff and who doesn't want to follow them. And, you know, so not everybody's bought in. And I think that was tough for everyone, really. And it just wasn't easy for me as a redshirt freshman who had, you know, no impact on the game. So I can't imagine what it was like for those guys who were seniors after having just gone to two BCS bowl games. But I think at the end of the day, it's that idea that those guys, you know, they stuck through it. They didn't quit. And I mean, they care more about UC football than other people care about anything in life. So, I mean, it was a really, really, really good learning experience for all of us, and an eye-opening experience for me that, you know, it's not all going to be handed to you. You got to go out there and earn it as a team. And yeah, it was interesting.
Like, what was something that changed, like, during the summer after that year was over? Like, what was the new mentality? Like, obviously you guys bounced back, like, won the Liberty Bowl, like, won 10 games, like, ended up ranked, I think, at the end of the season.
So, like, yeah.
Like, what was the big, was there, like, a big, like, a galvanizing point where things changed, or was it just everybody was ready to go for year two?
Yeah, I don't know if I remember anything in particular that stood out that was like, okay, we're going to turn this thing around. I almost felt like, again, I had no impact on the game, but watching that game our first year when we went 4-8, when we went out to Fresno and we were up 14-0, I don't know if you remember, and then, who was it? Vidal Hazelton, I think, tore his ACL, and kind of morale was low. I mean, it felt like, you know, we were up and we were just, it felt like we were dominating real early. And I was like, I feel like we're going to be really good this year. And then all of a sudden they scored once, twice, three and four times later. And then it almost just felt like I don't know how really to describe it, but, I felt like we were a really good team. We had a lot of really great players that first year. So I wonder if it was, I don't know that there was anything in particular that jumped out the next year. It was more or less just us gelling together as a team and getting used to the new coaching staff. And yeah, I mean, that's about what I would attribute it to, but I might not be the best guy to ask. Somebody like Zach Caleros would be a guy, I'm trying to think of someone else that was a junior going into their senior year the next year, or maybe even Isaiah Pete. I mean, there was a lot of good guys that were on that first year team that went 4-8 and then winning the Belk Bowl or the Liberty Bowl the next year. So that was,
like you said, there was a ton of talent on that team.
Yeah, like, there was.
Bins, and I think like DJ Woods was on that team.
Yeah.
Solid receivers.
It was, and it was crazy because I remember, I don't know if you remember Marcus Barnett, but he was like an All-American, and I think he was like our third or fourth string receiver. It was just crazy how talented that team was.
What's it like as like a walk-on? I'm not sure, like, not a lot of people know what the walk-on life is like. Like, what were the, like, some of the things, like, what do you do in practice as a walk-on? Do you just do the same things, or is it different?
Yeah. At least when I was there, it was pretty much most of the times the walk-ons were, you know, the scout offense or scout defensive players. But yeah, I mean, you do all of the drills. I think you do all of the you may not get obviously as many reps when they go live, but for us as specialists, as a walk on it, I mean, it's obviously different for specialists, but we would, when we were with Coach Tuberville, we would all go into the weight room and lift weights while the other guys were out there practicing. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing really different outside of that. I think everybody pretty much does the same stuff and for sure puts in the same workouts in the off season and things like that too. So
that's pretty interesting. But do you, the walk-ons, do they travel for road games or do you just there at the home games?
Yeah, it depends. I think some of the guys that are walk-ons that maybe it could be a couple of things. Maybe they're a walk-on, but they're expected to play the next season. And that was kind of the case with me. I did travel my first year, even though I was a redshirt walk-on kicker. I think it was more to get you adapted to the environment of being in somebody else's stadium where their crowd's, you know, against you versus being at a home game where everything's, you know, going your way or feels like the crowd's all in your favor. So part of it is probably just preparing somebody for the next season. But not everybody would travel that was a walk-on. And then the other thing is probably just the lack of depth. If we, you know, if you got five offensive linemen, obviously you need to bring a couple of extra guys. So that's probably another reason. But yeah, I think when we had home games, we had 100+ guys on the sidelines. For away games, it was much less than that.
The crowd question was, or crowd point you brought up brings me to my next question. It's like your second game as kicker, you guys went to Tennessee. Like, how crazy was it playing like at a gigantic stadium like that? And how long did it take you to get Rocky Top out of your head?
Oh my gosh. That was nuts. That was really, really cool to play in their stadium. It was, I mean, it was awesome. That might have been, I can't think of a better away game, maybe Ohio State besides that one. I mean, just in terms of the atmosphere. But yeah, with Rocky Top, it was, I don't know if you ever walked to practice or walked even within three blocks of campus when we were practicing, but Butch Jones would always play Rocky Top over the speakers and it would drive me insane. It would drive everyone insane. But I mean, he did it obviously for good reason to get us prepared for it, but it was so excessive. And I probably had it stuck in my head for the next 8 weeks. I mean, it was incredible. And I still find myself like singing it during football season out of nowhere. It just because it's almost like that, you know, you hear that song and just brings back all these nightmares of that song just playing over the entire Nippert Stadium speakers for a week and a half.
Oh, that sounds like a nightmare.
It was, I mean, it was funny. It was, Butch Jones did some pretty funny, crazy, off the wall things, and that was definitely one of them. So it was funny.
Speaking of atmospheres, like one of the big atmospheres with UC are night games. You played quite a few like Thursday night games and Saturday night games. How different is it? Is the atmosphere at Nippert as a player like from day to night?
I mean, it literally is day and night. I mean, playing at nighttime in Nippert Stadium was the most fun experience that you could have as an athlete at UC, I think. I mean, there was Thursday night games were the best, and it, not only were you at night in the NIP, but, I mean, you knew you were on national TV, and there was just a totally different buzz about those games. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty awesome. And noon games and 3 p.m. games are fun, but the night games are just something else. So pretty awesome experience.
Do any of the night games stand out to you? Like one, which one is your favorite? Like your best memory?
For me, I'm gonna personally. I think the NC State game was a lot of fun. That might have been our first. No, it wasn't. You know what? I'm gonna say two games because now I remember. So NC State was probably personally for me the most memorable because I remember it was like, you know, my first three field goals and, or it wasn't my first three, but it was, you know,
you went
three for three that night. I think I had a 48 yarder or something like that. So it was cool. But that was also the year after we went to NC State and they whooped our butts. So that was cool. The other Thursday night game was, I believe it was the first game of our 2011 season where we played Pittsburgh and the very first play from scrimmage, George Wynn rushes for like a 65-yard touchdown and just throws the ball like 30 rows up into the stands. And I mean, he got a penalty for it, but nobody cared. And it was awesome. That first play set the stage for the entire night, and that was really cool.
Yeah, that's the one that stands out to me. It's like, that was the beginning of the season, too.
Yeah. The River City rivalry, and yeah. I agree. That was
cool. What did you guys do anything with that trophy? That weird trophy?
the one with, like, the... Oh, man, what was it?
It's like the handle on it or whatever weird thing it is.
Drawn on a blank on what it's called. But, yeah, I don't know what it's up to nowadays. I haven't been in the Linder Center for quite some time, and they usually keep all of those rivalry trophies and all of those other, you know, championship trophies in the Linder Center. When you first walk in, it's on that first floor in a bunch of glass cases with all the other kind of plaques and history of UC Athletics. So it might still be in there. I really don't know.
When you're down on the sideline, do you try to like be one of the people that runs up to grab the trophy when the game is over or ring the victory bell?
No way, man. Well, I wouldn't be the first to ring the victory bell, but I mean, I wasn't sprinting over to those trophies. I thought like the guys that did all the work. I mean, all I did, you know, I swung my leg a couple of times and kicked a few footballs. The guys that were out there, you know, battling and, you know, running all around, hitting people, they were the ones that deserved to run over and grab that thing first. So I wasn't gonna jump in there with, you know, and steal some of their thunder. So
you don't really have to run in there and do anything. You just have to be standing around it when the cameras go there.
Yes,
that's free, right? TV time.
Got to be holding up the signs, the number one finger, and yeah.
But speaking of rivalries, do you think it's kind of weird, like besides Miami, that UC doesn't really have a rival? Like, how weird was it when the league switched to the AAC, and you guys played like kind of like a bunch of random teams?
Yeah, it was.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, I was gonna just agree with you. I think it is strange. I don't know that. I mean, Pittsburgh wasn't a rivalry for long, but it felt right. And Louisville obviously was a longtime rival, and that was probably my favorite rivalry game, both in basketball and in football. But I do think that it is cool that UC and Miami is the oldest non-conference football rivalry in college football. So I think that's a pretty neat little nugget that I learned when I was there. But yeah, it just doesn't feel like we have a true conference rival anymore. I mean, when I look at it in basketball, I might consider like a UConn as a rival, but that almost feels like it's just because we're the two longest tenured teams in the AAC. I mean, I don't know another reason for why I feel that way, but yeah, it just doesn't feel like there's much of a rivalry anymore, which is a bummer.
It is, because I think it definitely takes away like from the home schedule. Like once conference play kicks in. It's like different when you have like, I don't know, like Louisville and Pitts on the schedule, but then when you have like South Florida and like Tulane coming in. It doesn't seem like there's the same cachet.
Yeah, and it's nothing against their universities or their programs. It's just it doesn't feel like a rivalry. It just doesn't have the history that those games had. Yeah, you're right.
So was the NC State game, was that like your best personal memory from UC? So you did make the game-winning field goal that your first season against Pittsburgh when you went 4-for-4.
Yeah, so that would the Pittsburgh game would probably be my personal favorite or most memorable game. But that probably would have came to mind the reason I said NC State was it was a Thursday night a night game in the NIT. But yeah, I mean, the Pittsburgh game was a lot of fun. That was also just a really good game. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch our teams play neck and neck and come out on top in their stadium. So that was a lot of fun.
What was the best opposing field to play on? Like your whole career?
Yeah. So it's interesting because we got to play in a bunch of NFL stadiums when you think about it. I mean, we played, so where all did we play? Charlotte was pretty cool, but we got to play at Charlotte, Washington, D.C. Did you just hear that?
Yeah.
So I have a cat, and he just crawled up next to me and meowed. That was weird. All right, so... Charlotte, Washington, what else? Obviously Cincinnati and
Pittsburgh. Yeah,
Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, South Florida. We played Tampa. I would say it's hard. I loved playing on grass, so it's hard to, I really, really enjoyed the field and the stadium at Tennessee, but again, I think it's hard also to not include Ohio State in that mix just because that environment was incredible too. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to pick.
How different was it from playing at Nippert to when you guys played at the whole season at Paul Brown Stadium?
It was cool. We got to play in an NFL stadium for 6 games, which was really cool. And we got to practice down there a lot and use their practice facilities and things like that. So it was a good experience, but I don't think that there's anything like Nippert Stadium. And I mean, it was just a bummer that not only we didn't get to play there, but we missed it on our whole senior season. And then the next season when I came back to Nippert, and watched one of those games at night in this brand new stadium. I was so jealous. I just, oh my gosh. I was like, gosh, this thing is unbelievable. And I mean, I was happy for UC and those guys, but I was for sure jealous that we didn't get to play under that.
Yeah, that does seem like it would suck because it's kind of completely different now.
Yeah, it is. It's wild. And I don't know if you've been... Have you been to the stadium for a game yet?
No, I haven't personally, but people I talk to say it's a lot better now that they upgraded.
No, it's incredible. And I just went to... I've been to a couple of FC Cincinnati games, too. And, I mean, the whole stadium is just amazing for anything. I mean, whether it's FC or UC football, but it's just incredible. It's every time I walk in and I see that giant press box with all the suites, I just think like this, it's crazy that this is Nippert. Like that wasn't like that, you know, more than 3 or 4 years ago or whenever they finished the construction. It was, it's incredible. It's really, really cool.
speaking of FC, like, do you have any, like, feelings about them playing at Nippert Stadium? Like, a lot of the weirdo people do?
I love it. I don't know. I have no reason to hate it. I don't know why somebody can truly not like the fact that, you know, another sports franchise is attracting a ton of people to that historic stadium. So, I mean, I'm probably biased because I grew up playing soccer too, and I love soccer, but I still think that it's really cool that, that they get this whole nother sports franchise there and they draw huge crowds. I don't know if you saw on Twitter or not today, but they sold out the game already for the New York Red Bulls game next Tuesday night. And I think it's awesome. I wish they could find a way to make it work where the MLS would, you know, accept them and let them play in Nippert. But I know that there's financial reasons for them having to have their own stadium, but I think it's awesome. I love it.
I think it's only a good thing. Like, as long as you get, like, a ton of people down to UC's campus, like, how is that ever a bad thing? And it's not like they play on, like, grass or anything. It's just, like, field turf.
Right, yeah. They're not damaging the field in any way. You're right.
How much different is it playing on field turf than natural grass?
I don't know. I liked kicking on grass better than turf, but I don't know what the rest of the guys on the team would say. I don't know if, you know, an offense or a defensive lineman or a running back can make better cuts or hold their ground better on one or the other, or if they really care at all. I don't know. I did prefer grass, though, for sure.
Interesting. So, like, moving on in your career, like, your second year, you led the Big East in scoring. Did you even know you led the Big East in scoring?
I probably did at some point, but I totally have, I didn't remember that, but that's funny. I don't recall. I don't think it surprises me, though, because of how good our team was and how many opportunities I had to kick extra points or short field goals. So, I mean, that's wild. I didn't realize that.
Hey, you're two years in the Big East, you led in extra points made and attempted.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, played on some really awesome teams. So, yeah, it's easy to kick those short little field goals and those extra points. So I'll take them as many as we can get. But, you know, it's cool, but, I mean, I don't know. With great offenses, you can expect the kicker of that team to be the top scorer, so.
Rewinding back real quick, the 2011 season, like, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about, like, the West Virginia game. Because you guys were, like, had one loss to Tennessee, but you were, like, in charge of the league. And then, like, Kolaros got hurt. And you guys like had a failed rally at the end. How much did was that your worst loss at UC, or did something top it?
Yeah, no, I can't think of anything worse than that. That was not fun for any of us. But yeah, for me in particular, it wasn't a very good game, and I think I was 0-2 that game, which is a certainly didn't help, but yeah, I mean, if you go back and if we win that game, I mean, the chances of us going to a BCS bowl game that year are significantly higher after that. So that was a tough one, and I know the next day in film, we went back and watched a whole bunch of these small details that could have changed the outcome of the game one way or another, and obviously my kicks were a part of that and didn't do much to help, but it's wild. I mean, that game, I know it's, you know, super cliche to say that it's a game of inches, but it is crazy how many plays that game just went an inch the wrong way and could have turned, you know, could have turned the game around and had a completely different outcome. So, yeah, that was tough for sure.
Yeah, because like, I think you guys in West Virginia and Louisville all ended up tied, and then West Virginia ended up winning the league.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's as simple as, you know, you make a field goal and nothing else matters. I know I just talked about it being a game of inches, but really, if I could have just put one through, I mean, that does change it. So, yeah, it was tough.
I don't think anybody would blame you for losing that game. At least they shouldn't.
Well, no, I mean, everybody knows that it's a team sport, and I know, you know, you're always going to be your worst critic. So, but yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't easy for us. And gosh, I'm trying to think.
I'm pretty sure they did block a kick to end that game.
They did. Yeah.
Is that the worst feeling like there possibly is as a kicker?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say if you just kind of missed one outright at the last second, probably be a little bit worse, but yeah, I mean, I do remember that happened, and you know, you never saw exactly who, I don't know exactly what happened. I think what I honestly personally think was that, you know, the ball didn't get up high enough, and it was probably easy for someone to just reach their hand up, but we never really did go back and watch it. It was almost too painful to go back and watch that film. But yeah. But no, I mean, it was. I'm trying to think though. Do you remember what game of the season that was? Because I can't remember if that was later in the year or if that was early on. Because you're right, I remember us tying, but I can't remember what games we had that followed that.
That was game 9. The next game was Rutgers.
Okay.
When you guys ended up losing to Rutgers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So, not a good 2-week period for us, for sure.
Because I kind of forgot how bad that Rutgers game was. That.
Yeah.
But since UC can't, like, keep a quarterback healthy for some reason, like, how much does it affect the team to, like, have to go, like, that season when, like, Zach and, like, Munchie played, then the next season it was, like, Munchie and Kay, then it was Munchie and Kay again, and then it was Keel your senior season until, like, he got hurt. Like, how much does it affect the team to, like, keep losing your quarterback like that?
Yeah, you know, speaking from my perspective, it's not easy to have kind of the inconsistency of who's the quarterback, but I also think that it showed, I mean, how successful we were with all of those guys really showed how much depth we had and how talented they all were. And now that you bring that up, I remember when Zach went down and Munchie freaking killed it that game. He had like he busted a run for like 80 yards or something late in the game that gave us a chance. And, and I mean, Munchie was good. And I remember Zach coming back from that injury. Like, it wasn't even humanly possible to come back from a broken ankle as quick as he did, but he did it for the Liberty Bowl. But yeah. And then Brandon Kay was solid too. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, all those guys are really, really talented dudes. So I think that we all felt confident with them, any of them being the quarterback. But I think in general, at almost any sport, but in particular football, where you have a commander at the quarterback position, to have somebody there set in stone for a full season is probably, you know, it is important. So I don't know that it necessarily having Munchie full-time or Brandon full-time is going to you know, cause us to win more. You know, I guess I can't really speak to that, but I don't know. I felt like we were pretty confident under all of those guys.
How much does it affect like the morale of the team? Like when like those guys go down, just like for instance, like Munchie's injury was like devastating, and like in the middle of the game, and like Zach, he got hurt like that first quarter of that game. Like, you guys were able to, like, rally around in the West Virginia game. But, like, the Illinois game, it seemed like that was the definite turning point. Like, the guy, like, seriously injured, and you guys kind of, like, just got blown out a little bit.
Like, yeah.
How hard is it to, like, balance, like, paying attention to the game and then seeing, like, one of your team, like, one of your friends, like, suffer a terrible injury?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And it definitely takes the morale out of the team. I mean, it's hard not to see, like you said, one of your best friends just have this absolutely gruesome injury and then bounce back like nothing happened. I mean, I don't know that that's even possible to just completely erase that from your memory for the next, you know, 24 hours. That's just crazy. So morale is definitely impacted when something like that happens. And sometimes you bounce back and sometimes you don't. In Illinois, we didn't. Yeah, that was tough.
That was just tough, like, watching as a fan. Like, watching that happen. And, like, that season was really, like, tough all the way around because, like, a couple weeks later, like, it was, like, Ben Flick, like, got killed in, like, the car accident. Like, at least you guys had, like, a bye to deal with. Like, how hard was that to deal with in season?
That was honestly probably the most difficult thing that I had ever experienced when we were, you know, at UC. And it might be the most difficult thing that I've ever seen a team go through. I mean, I didn't know Ben too well. I had a few interactions with him, but there was nothing to stop you from just losing all control of your emotions when that happened. And that was, oh my gosh, that was terrible. And then, and you know, obviously everybody knows what happened to Chimota, you know, not even 2 years later when he had his accident and gosh, it was brutal. It was not something you would ever wish on anyone. Yeah, that was not easy to go through that season. I mean, obviously, you try to turn around and win games in their name and in their honor. So, you know, it's tough.
That would be tough if it happened like in the summer. Like, I couldn't imagine going through something like that during the season.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you're right. It's not easy. It wasn't.
Like, was there a hangover, like, with the team, like, going to South Florida the next week? Like, even, like, though you guys had a bye? Like, was it hard, like, getting back into football mode after that?
Yeah, it was. I think it was hard. I mean, it was hard for a long time for a lot of people. I mean, you know, like I said, I didn't really know Ben too well, but from what I did know of him, he was just such a great person. And gosh, I don't know that you ever truly get over it. But yeah, I mean, there was definitely some sad, you know, faces and some emotions for the rest of the year and I mean even beyond that. So yeah, I would say that there was that kind of, you know, that was in the back of our minds.
Because, like, just like on paper, like that loss against USF was probably the worst one you guys took when you were on the team. That team was, I think that team finished like 2-10.
Yeah. What, and was that the game, was USF
I can't remember when they just, they straight up took it to us. I mean, there, I remember a game we played USF, and I don't remember if it was that one, but I do remember we just got smoked. I mean, it was, I want to say they had like 3 touchdowns in like 5 minutes or something. I can't even remember what happened, but there was a game where we just got absolutely blown out by them.
Yeah, it was that one because they blocked a kick, and then
they got
a couple field goals, and then they ended up scoring again.
Yeah, you're right. That's right.
And they were up 23-6 at halftime.
Yeah.
That's the only time you lost to USF, too. That's a kind of a bummer.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you guys won every other one. I don't know about 2010, but like your other 4 years, you guys beat them every time.
It's interesting. I don't know what the rest of our records would be. I'd be interested in seeing how we did against all the teams in the conference all 4 years.
Speaking of that, you guys had a pretty big switch, like in the middle of your career, when you went from the Big East to the AAC. How was that just to deal with as a kicker, as a prominent player on the team, going from a power conference to somebody who was locked out? Like, you guys could have played for the BCS, and then the next season you could have gone undefeated, and you wouldn't have had a chance. Like, how hard was that to deal with?
Yeah, that was... I mean, it stunk, for sure. It wasn't... I mean, the AAC is a great league, but it's certainly... I'm not going to, you know, beat around the bush and say that it's a... I mean, it's just not what the Big East was when there was Pittsburgh and Rutgers at the top of their game, and it just was a different league. When you realize that you could go undefeated, but you also needed, you know, some other teams to, or some other, you know, pieces of the puzzle to fall into place for you to get into a BCS bowl game like that was, I mean, it just wasn't a great feeling, but, there was nothing you can really do about it. So at the end of the day, you just had to, you had to go out there and try to win 12 games. It's not like you're not going to, you know, try to because you just know that there's a chance that you might not go to a BCS bowl game or whatever, Power 5
the bowl game.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a bummer, but, it was still really cool. I mean, we also got to go to, you know, other schools like the Tulane or the Tulsas and Central Florida and you know, there's just Eastern Carolina. There's just, you know, more experiences that you get to make. So,
actually, you wouldn't have like Munchie going back to like New Orleans and having like his big game in the senior season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, good things come of it. It's just a matter of how you look at it, right?
How much do the players, like, pay attention to, like, the conference realignment stuff? Like, when all the Big 12 rumors were swirling, did you guys pay attention to it? Or was it just something, like, you didn't try to think about?
I don't know. I mean, I was following that kind of stuff, so I was interested in what was happening. But I don't know what the rest of the team was thinking, and we certainly didn't address that, or we didn't have, you know, Mike Bone or any of those guys. They never came and talked to us and said, hey, here's, you know, what we're doing and what we're trying to do. I think all of that was kind of behind closed doors, but I think I'd be lying if I told you that nobody was thinking about it. I was certainly following it, and I'm sure a lot of other guys were too.
So you had like teams just like fall off your schedule, like West Virginia, like left, like Syracuse and Pitt left. Though, like, you guys did play them like one last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Syracuse was actually, that was that. I forgot about them. I loved playing in their dome. That was really cool too.
Yeah, what's it like playing in a dome like that? It just like seems like gigantic and kind of like weird. At least I'm like watching.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. I mean, it's I mean, it's not much different, but it's, for me, you know, for kickers, it's like a dream come true because you don't have any bad conditions to kick in. So I loved it. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was fun.
Where was the worst place to travel? Is it, and why was it UConn?
That's funny. You didn't give me the chance to answer, but you already knew the answer. Because it's freaking 12 degrees there, and every time we played, it was felt like it was December 30th. It was. I'll never forget though. Our first game we played out there was my redshirt freshman year when Jake Rogers was still the starter, and Butch Jones was like. He was all about nobody wearing long sleeves or leggings or anything. And I'm just like, am I going to stand on the sidelines in a freaking jersey? And I did. And I just, it was like noon. It was a noon game, I think. And it might have been 20 degrees. And it was probably like 30 mile per hour winds. I'm probably exaggerating a little bit, but it was miserable. And that's probably why, because that was the coldest I think I've ever been in a football game or ever in my life. And that just set, you know, my mood for any time I ever went back to UConn. In fact, my wife and I recently went to, we went on a trip to Ireland earlier this summer, and something happened with our travel plans, and we ended up flying to Hartford, Connecticut as a connecting flight. And I was just like, I don't want to go back to Hartford. And I don't care if it's, you know, June 15th. I just don't want to be in Hartford because of my, you know, that one day I had. So.
It seems like no matter, like, what time, like, you played UConn, it's, like, always dark. And, like, the games seem like they last forever, no matter what the score is.
Yeah. The one game we did play out there, I think it was my third year, so my second year. My sophomore year, you know, redshirt sophomore year, we beat them pretty handily, but that might have been the last game of the season too, and it was kind of a night game. I remember that game was actually a lot of fun because we won the AAC that year, or maybe it was still the Big East, I can't remember, but I don't know. There's just something about that game that brings back a kind of like a good, comfortable, I don't even know how to describe it, feeling of just winning a game, not easily, but handily, and knowing that we just won a championship, and I don't know, it was kind of a fun game to play in, so I shouldn't bash UConn like that, but yeah.
But it's UConn, you're allowed to.
Yeah, that's right.
So you did, like, win a share of the Big East title, even though you didn't go to the BCS game. You guys still won. And you guys won a share of the AAC title as well your last season. Like, did you get rings for those, and do you still have them?
I do. Actually, I got a ring. It's funny. I have four rings, I think, from various either conference championships or bowl games. And, I remember we got a ring for winning we didn't win the AAC and we lost the Belk Bowl that year, but we still got a ring that year. And all I could remember thinking was like, why do I have this? Like this, I didn't win anything to get this. And I don't know. I thought it was interesting, but I still do have them all. And in fact, it's funny. My dad, they're at my house, and so he took them into work one day and sat in the meeting, and he just had these four giant, like UC, like diamond rings on his hand. He's just sitting there, like peddling his hands at this meeting, like just being a total goofball. And I don't know. We just got a kick out of that because the rings. I mean, they're really cool, but they're ridiculously huge, and I can't bring myself to wear them regularly, so him and his coworkers got a kick out of that. So the rings, I guess they're serving their purpose.
So speaking of the Belk Bowl, like, did anybody know what Belk was before you went to the Belk Bowl? Or was it a surprise when you had, like, a shopping spree at Belk or whatever weird thing that they do for the Belk Bowl?
I missed the first part of your question. What was it?
Did anybody know what Belk was before you went to the Belk Bowl?
I didn't. I honestly didn't. And when I got there, I found out it was basically the Macy's of the South, I guess. And it was cool, though. I mean, I think I still have a gift certificate there that I should use. But, I mean, they gave us some nice gifts at that game. And, yeah, I mean, I got a bunch of clothes there. And I remember everybody had a blast shopping there. It was a good time. I actually really enjoyed the Belk Bowl. And I was pumped when we went back for a second time because Charlotte, if you've ever been to Charlotte, it's just a really cool city. It's kind of the same size as Cincinnati. And it's a little bit cleaner, and it's just got a lot of cool things for young professionals there. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I actually would put that up there. I enjoyed the Belk Bowl probably the most of all the bowl games, but the being on Beale Street New Year's Eve in Memphis at the Liberty Bowl was a ton of fun too. So yeah, Belk Bowl was a good time.
Yeah, your first Belk Bowl, you guys played Duke in that memorable game. Was that like your favorite bowl experience the first year, or was it better the second time, even though the game didn't go like your way?
Oh yeah, the first time for sure. The first year was a ton of fun. The second year was a lot of fun too, but it was kind of the week of preparation the second year. I think just going to practice and stuff just wasn't as fun. You didn't really have kind of the same buzz as you did the year before, but it was still, I really enjoyed being in Charlotte and doing all of the things. I mean, the things that we did were fun. You get to go to the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and you get to ride in the NASCAR going, I don't know, 200 miles per hour or whatever it was. And so the activities, I think the Belk Bowl does a really good job, but it definitely loses a little bit of the buzz when you go back and go back for a second year. But
Belk Bowl Twitter is like a good Twitter account.
Yeah. What was it? So I remember reading about a player. It's one of my favorite tweets I think I've ever seen, and it's not even like a popular one. But there was a player that played in the Belk Bowl a few years ago that stole from the Belk store, even though he had the Belk gift card, and and he got caught. And I don't know if he got arrested or whatever, but. I remember some guy tweeting that. He's like, Belk Bowl player arrested at Belk store on a Belk shopping spree with a Belk gift card or something like that. And someone replied to this guy saying, it's not about the loot that you're stealing. It's about the intricacy of the heist. And he said that, like, all Belk thieves know this. I don't know. I got an absolute kick out of the whole story because it's just like, dude, you just got so much money to go and shop at Belk, and you're going to go steal something. It blew my mind, and it was awesome.
It happened last year with an Arkansas player.
Was that it?
Yeah, he tried to steal $260 worth of things from Belk, even though he had $450 to spend.
Oh, I shouldn't be laughing, but it's hilarious. It's just like, what is going on, man? Like, what's... I just don't get it.
Before we talk about like the coaching stuff, like what was the best like bowl swag? Was it the Military Bowl, Liberty Bowl, Belk Bowl?
Good question. Man, Military Bowl, I think. Was it the Military Bowl that we got in Xbox One? That was pretty solid. I don't think anything tops that. I think it was the Military Bowl. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a big time gift right there, and
I think all the clothes that we got was really cool too. So, yeah, I'd say the Military Bowl.
Do you ever look at like some of the other like bowl swag stuff and get like disappointed you guys didn't go to that bowl game?
Well, I did like every year. I would look at what the best bowl swag was, and I'm trying to think. Actually, I remember when I went on my visit to UC, when those guys went to the Sugar Bowl, I remember they said they got to go to, like, Lazy Boy, or buy Lazy Boy furniture or something. And I was like, that is incredible. Like, you just got to buy a sofa or something with the points that they gave you. So I always wanted to go to a BCS bowl game, obviously for more than just the bowl swag, but those games were, it looked like they had pretty solid stuff.
Like anything where it's like a gift tent, that just seems awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, you just go in and get the pick, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
So, before the Belk Bowl, your first time, Butch Jones left for Tennessee, and you guys had Steve Stripling as your coach. Like, how different was it like once Butch Jones left and you guys had like somebody else running the ship?
It was different, but everybody loved Strip. I mean, Coach Strip was the man, and I don't know anybody that didn't like him on our team. So when we all found out that he was going to coach us for that game, we were just pumped. And not because we didn't like Coach Jones, but we just loved Coach Strip that much. And I think the week of bowl prep was just so relaxed, and I don't know. I mean, everybody had a freaking blast. It was just fun. Coach Tripp's a good dude. All those guys were good guys, but they couldn't have picked a better person to be the interim coach for that time. And everybody knew he was going to Tennessee with Coach Jones, but everybody still wanted to play for him and win the game for him. So it was cool.
So what was it like when like Butch Jones left? Like, obviously, as fans, everybody knew, like, he was meeting with Colorado, and, like, he was going to take the Colorado job, then he didn't take the job, then he went to Tennessee. Like, yeah. How hard was that to deal, like, with as a player? Because I'm assuming, like, you guys knew a lot of the same stuff the fans did until, like, he broke the news or somebody else broke the news.
Yeah. It was, I mean, for the most part, we were just as much in the know as you guys were. I mean, we probably found out, like, 30 minutes before he had a press conference that one morning. But I don't know. I mean, I think at some point at the beginning of the process, when you find out that your coach is shopping around for another job, I mean, you kind of get a little, I mean, it's hard not to be upset about it. But then after so many days or weeks of hearing all these rumors, you just want to know. I mean, there's a point where you get restless and you're like, okay, I want to know, are you going to be here or not? And you just don't have that answer. So it's not easy, but it's just like it is for the fans in terms of the level of knowledge that we had, where we knew he was going. So
how did you find out he was going? So remember, we talked to John Goble. He said they found out Brian Kelly was leaving on his way to the awards banquet. That's when that news broke, and everybody was really upset.
Yeah. Yeah, the way we found out with Butch was he called us into a team meeting. It was really early. I don't remember what day of the week it was, to be honest, but it was just a really early meeting, and it was probably a 30, 45-minute meeting, and, I mean, that's how all of his meetings were, but he told us, you know, kind of start to finish the whole process and what his mindset was about it. And, you know, I mean, that's the way he did it. I mean, they called a team meeting, and once we all got a text like, hey, team meeting, you know, tomorrow morning or whatever it was, we all knew. So it wasn't quite like Brian Kelly's leaving the middle of the, the awards banquet or whatever it was.
So, like, then, as soon as he left, Tommy Tuberville got hired. It's like, what was the transition like between, like, Butch Jones and Tuberville? With, like, completely new stuff since most of his staff went to Tennessee. Yeah. Or Tubbs cleaned him out himself.
Yep. Yeah, it was totally different. I will say that everybody was excited. I mean, most people only think about Coach Stubberville in his last couple of seasons at UC, but I think people forget how excited they were to have that name, that Coach Stubberville, you know, guy that took Auburn, you know, to an undefeated season. And so everybody was pumped, and everybody was saying, like, you know, it's crazy we got this guy coming in to coach us. The transition, though, was almost night and day, at least with his coaching style versus Butch Jones. Butch was a little bit more vocal and in your face, and he would try to motivate you by you know, kind of, you know, trying to get underneath your skin. And Tubbs was just the total opposite. He would sit back at practice and kind of watch the whole thing play out and only speak up when he felt that he needed to. And I mean, he would definitely yell the way Coach Jones would if he felt he needed to, but it was just a completely different, I guess, aura about him. But when it came to the staff, I personally didn't notice much, but I obviously did not interact with the quarterback's coaches in meetings or in practice. I mean, I knew him outside of football, and all of them were just great, great dudes, but I think a pretty big difference in terms of what we did from a weightlifting standpoint, that, I mean, that was just totally different. And I feel like I owe, you know, I Coach Walker was our weightlifting coach, Joe Walker at UC when Coach Tubbs was there, and he was awesome. I'll never forget the things that we learned from him. I mean, both in the weight room and outside of it. But the guy was just a solid human being, and he hired, you know, the greatest graduate assistants and assistant coaches out there and to train us. And I thought he did a great job with it. Not to say that Coach Lawson didn't do a great job before that, but Coach Walker was just you just knew he knew what he was doing. Plus, the guy is like 6'4". And he was like, I honestly couldn't put a weight on him, but the guy was just rocked up. I mean, you knew he knew his stuff because he just looked the part. And he's a good guy. I don't know. I felt like I got so much stronger and faster and more athletic under him. So I was sad to see him go after Coach Stubberville left, but you know, I guess that happens.
I don't know if you can answer this, but it seems like when there's ever like a coaching change, everybody like raves about like the strength coach who comes in next. Is that just because it's like things are different, or is it because, like, I don't know, like different people have different philosophies, like obviously, or is it just like the changing of like the guard like adds something different, or like are some people just a lot more awesome than others?
That's a really good point or question. I don't know the answer to that because it's weird because we live in a totally different world now than we did even 5 years ago. I mean, the strength coach at UC, I mean, he looks and sounds awesome, and I haven't met him or seen any of his workouts, but the one thing about them is that they're really, really active on social media, and I think that's part of, you know, the hype around it and how widespread it is. I mean, I've seen people tweeting about, you know, when those guys were doing the before and after pictures, like all the players were, and people were tweeting like, oh my gosh, did UC even have a strength coach before this? And I almost took offense to that because I don't think I've ever had a better strength coach in my life than Joe Walker. And, I don't know. I just felt like it was a different time. Like, you know, our coaching staff wasn't on Twitter really, but these guys are, and I think what they're doing is great. Don't get me wrong. There's different methods of doing things, and there's different ways that players react to them, and people's bodies change, you know,
based on whatever routine they're doing. So one thing might work for them, which might not work for somebody else. But, yeah, I think it's interesting the way, and I like it. I like the way that this new coaching staff is coming in and just firing on all cylinders on social media with Twitter and things like that. I think I'm excited about it because of what I'm seeing, but I know that it's just a different avenue of showing the excitement around the team. So I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's not, but I don't really know. That's a good question as to why there's always so much excitement around new strength coaches.
I think you were onto something with the diet stuff, because that has to have something to do with it. Especially now that we like know more and more about like how like just like athletes' bodies work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you guys do any of the wearable stuff at UC, or was that like, I guess that's more current than it would be a few years ago, even.
What do you mean by wearable?
Like where they track like your heart rate and all that stuff when you exercise.
Oh. Yeah, no, we didn't do it. Are they doing that now at UC?
I don't know if they're doing it at UC. I know they're doing it some places.
Are they? Yeah, that would have been cool to have and cool to see, but we didn't use it.
Guess we should talk about your junior year real quick. Like, it was a rough year for you, like, on the, like, kicking-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you did pretty well in the games you see, like, lost, which is kind of, seems weird to look at. But, like, what was, like, your, like, what happened, really? Like, was it, like, mental, or was it something else? I know I was reading something that said you guys went through, like, multiple holders. And that's a pretty big thing to, like, go through as a kicker, isn't it?
Yeah, and honestly, I would not say anything. It was certainly not on the holders. I think that was more of an attempt to, maybe by the coaching staff, to get me to think that, you know, a change was better. And I don't know. I mean, I wasn't sitting there saying I want this holder, I want that holder. It just kind of happened that way. And maybe change for change's sake isn't always the best route, but, you know, doing something to make some sort of change, because obviously what I was doing just wasn't working. So, I honestly still to this day can't really pinpoint exactly what happened, but, you know, I guess I just got into a rut where I got into some bad habits and couldn't break them. And, I mean, if you look at the tape, I think I only missed one, maybe two field goals to the left that season. So, I was, you know, trying to figure out, you know, is it my hips? Am I leaving my hips open? And, I, you know, that's what I ultimately thought it was. And, you know, just had some bad habits with it with my technique that I just couldn't break. And yeah, I mean, it had nothing to do with snap, hold, or anything like that. It was all about me not fixing my form to get it right. And I mean, that was it. You're right. It wasn't a good season, but, gosh, I don't remember exactly where I placed that year, but it was at the bottom. I mean, of all kickers. So it just wasn't
like, you still like hit extra points extremely well.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I mean, I guess I think it was just when I would watch it, you know, like I said, it was always missing them to the right when I'm looking at it. So if you're watching from behind me, it's missing to the right. So that's just a function of, you know, poor technique and not having the discipline to fix it and get it right. So.
Yeah, but your senior year, like you ended up kicking off, and you did a pretty excellent job at kicking off.
Thanks.
Was it hard, like, going through the competition with Andrew Gantz? I know, like, a lot of articles from back then, like, say you were pretty, like, cool about competing with him. And, like, he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah.
And you seem pretty nice yourself, so it seems like it was, like, a healthy competition. But, like, how were you bummed, like, to lose the job? Or, like, are you, like, ready to go, like, kicking off?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was for sure bummed. I think if you lose a starting spot and you're not bummed, then, you know, you just shouldn't be doing it. So, but, I mean, you know, it happened, and I was really excited to do kickoffs, though. I mean, I thought I did pretty well, and if that was the one job that I was going to do all season, I was going to do it as best I could. So, but yeah, I mean, you're right about the competition, and it was a healthy competition. And Andrew's, you know, he's a great kid, and he works just as hard as anybody. So, at the end of the day, he came out on top, and yeah, I mean, it was a good life lesson, though, honestly, for me. I mean, I tried, you know, my best to not let it get to me, and if it did, you don't let it show, and you learn, you know, how to keep a level head through the good times and the bad. So a lot of really good lessons that came from that. But ultimately, it was, you know, he had a great season, so he helped the team, and you can't really look back and say that. I mean, I don't know. It worked out well. I mean, he did great with field goals, kickoffs, and you know, I did my thing with, or I'm sorry, he did great with field goals and extra points, and I did my thing with kickoffs. So yeah.
Like, you combined to like have a good special teams unit.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought we had a pretty solid, and Sam Geraci and John Lloyd punting. I mean, both of those guys did really well. So yeah.
An article about, like, the competition says, like, you went to London, and they gave you, like, a deeper perspective on life. Like, did that really help you, like, a lot going into that spring? Just, like, clear your head and, like, help you, like, get back in a positive mental space? So that year had just had to be rough.
Yeah, no, you're right. That trip to London was really cool, and it was eye-opening for me because, you know, I grew up on the west side of Cincinnati, and I don't know that I ever really left Cincinnati. I mean, if I did, you know, I was going to trips to, you know, Florida or wherever, you know, the popular U.S. vacations destinations are. But getting out of your comfort zone, and even if it was going to London, which is really similar to, I guess, in New York City, but just being around other college students, because I went there, you know, for the College of Business and a group of guys there with our professor, but just seeing the different cultures and being around different people and different minds and people of different races and things like that, I think there's a lot to be said about getting around or out of your comfort zone. And I don't know, I came back feeling like I had a different perspective on things, and I don't know, it was good. It was a lot of fun, but I didn't go on that trip, you know, to clear my mind or anything. I actually went because I wanted to get credit hours for school and learn, you know, new things and go to a cool city in the world that I probably wouldn't get the chance to do otherwise. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was really cool.
Oh, that sounds pretty awesome. Have you been anywhere else since then? You said you went to Ireland, but have you been any other places?
Yeah. So for our honeymoon, back in September, my wife and I went to Italy for a week, and well, it was about 9-10 days. So that was really, really fun. And then, yeah, like you had mentioned, we went to Ireland earlier this summer. So, yeah, I mean, it's really cool, and we're lucky that we're able to do it and we have the time to do it. So, you know, it's good to take a vacation, but I think if we can take these vacations and see other parts of the world and learn things about different cultures and different cities, it's fun to learn and vacation, I guess, is my point. So,
yeah, that sounds pretty great. Yeah. So we start to wrap up here. You got you're credited on your College Football Reference page for making 3 tackles in your career. Like, how exciting is it to make a tackle as a kicker, or is it like kind of terrifying to be? Because I was on the kickoff team when I played, and it was kind of an adventure trying to make tackles there. Like, how was it as a kicker?
It's crazy because, I mean, you think about the kickoff is like the most dangerous play in probably all of sports for the guys that are sprinting at each other for 60 yards. But it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say it's like terrifying, but it's when you're out there in the open field and, you know, it's just you versus one guy and you have the chance to make the tackle. I don't know. It's a good feeling. I honestly don't know why they're crediting me with three tackles, though, because I only had one that I can remember, and that was against Austin Peay, literally my second kickoff ever, and I can't remember where the other two were, but it was cool. I liked it. I liked when that happened because it's like a different perspective of football for me, at least. I mean, all I'm used to is just kicking off and it's a touchback, then all I gotta do is jog back and grab my tee and get off the field. But when you're actually in the action and have a chance to to make some sort of play or at least try to, it's exciting.
The game you got credited for two tackles was against Miami and the wherever they play now, Miami the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember that at all, or are they falsely giving you credit for tackles?
I think they're falsely giving me credit for that one. What was the other one?
That was it. It says you had a solo tackle and an assist, so it gave you two on that one.
I don't remember even a half of a tackle, but I'll take it. It's in the record books, right?
Who was the best player that you played against? Because you played against a lot of guys who did end up in the pros. The guys who were, like, I know, like, Kaya, he just got drafted on that same Miami team.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Like, Teddy Bridgewater, obviously, you played against. The Rutgers had some guys. Houston had some guys. Like, does anybody really, like, stand out?
Yeah, actually, one guy does. Russell Wilson. We played him. Oh, yeah. I was redshirt freshman year, but yeah, I do remember him. He was solid.
Next, that was the game you guys went to NC State and, like, got, like, killed, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was a pretty solid player. I mean, he was... Obviously, it's not fun getting beat, but he's a fun guy to watch.
That game, though, like, when you guys, like, lost to Louisville, like, the last time you played him, that game was pretty crazy. Like, did that one... Like, how much did, like, that one, like, sting? Since it was, like, senior day. And, like, I think they made a big comeback at the end.
Like, yeah, overtime game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it went into overtime, yeah. Like, Bridgewater, like, had that crazy pass.
Oh my gosh. He had that one, that, like, fourth down pass, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, like, that fourth down play. Then, like, he had, like, one, like, two plays later that was, like, insane.
Yeah, the touchdown?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'll never forget that. I could not believe that actually happened. It was just incredible. I mean, he was a great player, but what are the chances of that happening and then happening again two plays later, the plays that he made? I mean, yeah, that was tough.
That was a game you sent into overtime yourself. Like, you hit a field goal with like 10 seconds left to send it to overtime. Yeah.
That was probably the shining moment of the season for me, and that's not even close. I mean, that was as tough of a season that was. That kick is something I'll never forget. But, yeah, I mean, that game as a whole was just a ton of fun for it to be senior night, or maybe not senior night for me, but for those guys. And overtime wearing, you know, all black at night in Nippert, and that was fun.
The last time you would play them before they left?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, just like as an overall game, like, I think that was one of the most, like, fun games to watch the last few years, even though you guys lost. It was like a pretty entertaining game.
Yeah, it was.
Especially that year in the AAC, where like that the league was like garbage, and you guys didn't play UCF. Like, how hard was it not playing UCF when they were really good? Because, like, you guys, like, both, like, you were good both years, and, like, they lost one game in 2 years, and then all their players left by the time you guys played them.
Yeah. That was, so the first time when, I don't even know if, was I there? Was it the first time when they went to the BCS? I think I was, and it was just a bummer that we didn't play them. But then when it happened 2 years in a row, it was like, okay, what the heck, you know? And I don't know how those schedules are decided, but it was kind of like, come on, you know, give us a shot. Let's even if we have to go down there and play them, it's a conference game. We got to play once every 2 years, right?
Yeah, that one was just a gigantic bummer.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, how different was it playing in the league where, like, by the time, like, your final season was, like, you guys were in the AAC, and there wasn't, like, any, like, gigantic bowl game for you guys to go to? Like, is that something you guys, like, pay attention to? Or is it just, like, you don't really care where your bowl game is?
No, yeah, I think we do. It's similar to, I guess, my response is similar to when it came to conference realignment. Like, I was following it, the bowl games, like, every year whenever we found out what possible bowl games we would be able to play. And so, yeah, I mean, I can't remember what year it was, but I wanted to go to the St. Petersburg, Florida Bowl because I knew it would be warm and it seemed like a cool bowl game. And on top of that, I think it was before Christmas, and, I mean, we would have been able to go and spend Christmas and New Year's with our families, too. So I remember that being something that was kind of in the back of my head. I'm like, come on, that'd be cool if we got that one. But, obviously, if you're going to any bowl game, it's hard to be upset about it. I mean, I don't know that there's many bowl games out there that I truly would go to and say, this sucks, you know?
So, I guess last question. How do you feel about the Bearcats going into the season? You expressed some optimism earlier. Like, how much do you, like, still, I guess you still keep up with the team, obviously. But did you have, like, the same, like, passion you did, or did it take, like, did you have to decompress at all? Like, step away from football once your career ended? Or did, like, could you just jump in as a fan?
Yeah. The year after I graduated, I was pretty excited to not be playing football. I was excited. I shouldn't have said that. I was more excited to be able to hang out and watch college football all day on Saturday than I was disappointed that I wasn't playing anymore. And that's how I felt for the first year after I graduated, and the next year after that, so 2 years afterwards, and I had gone to a bunch of UC games anyway, so I wasn't like sitting at home watching them, but the 2 years after that, I remember going to, I think it was the Houston game, and I was just like, gosh, man, I miss it, and I was totally, you know, feeling like bummed out and stuff like that, but yeah, I mean, I do follow it pretty closely, not as close as I should, but, I mean, thankfully for things like Twitter, I'm able to check in every day and see what they're doing, either at practice or what kind of articles are out there, or, you know, what Bearcats blog is up to, and just following it. I'm excited because it just feels like everyone else is more excited. I felt like It felt like the last year, maybe even the last 2 years, the players weren't quite as excited as they are now. And I just think that the coaching staff up there is doing a great job of getting people hyped on social media. But now we're down to a couple weeks left until the season, so it's not just the buzz that they're creating. It's just the buzz of college football being back and UC football being back and playing in Nippert again. It's just gonna be a lot of fun. So I'm excited. I'm optimistic, and I'm not anticipating a gangbuster year or anything like that. If we get 9 or 10 wins, that's a huge win in my book. But I don't know. I'm just excited for the season. I think, regardless of who the coach is and regardless of who's playing, I'm ready.
Where can people find you on Twitter and Instagram and all that good stuff?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is, I'm honestly not a great follow. I like to retweet things about sports, but I also like to follow a bunch of like finance guys and stuff like that. So my Twitter name is just, I think it's just at T Miliano, and on Instagram it's just at Tony Miliano. So pretty boring names, and probably not the most exciting feed coming from me. But
how often do people get your name wrong? Does it happen a lot, or is your name pretty easy?
It's surprisingly difficult. I'd say 85% of people, almost everybody gets it wrong the first time they say it. I actually was just on the phone with a guy booking tea times not too long ago, and he asked me to spell my last name, and he pronounced it like perfectly the first time, and it totally threw me off, and I didn't like it. It was funny because I just wasn't expecting him to pronounce it right the first time, and he did. I remember growing up though, like at tournaments and stuff, you know, grade school basketball tournaments, when they would say your name when they introduce you, and it was never right. I mean, somebody would call me Tony Mallo or something stupid. And yeah, I mean, it's a cool last name though. I like it.
Well, thanks for joining the podcast. Hopefully you'll come back and do it again.
Yeah, I'd love to. I appreciate you having me, and it was good to catch up. I was glad that we were able to chat. I mean, even, you know, off air and things like that. I mean, it was good to get to know you a little better, so I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. We'll definitely have to have you back on. Thanks for joining us, and go Bearcats.
All righty. Thanks, man. Go Bearcats.